SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Dedicated doctor helping the most disadvantaged and an AFL legend are among a group of Indigenous trailblazers who have been recognised for their achievements at the annual National NAIDOC Awards. The awards recognise individual excellence and celebrate the strength, culture and leadership of First Nations people. And the 2025 edition marks the 50th anniversary of NAIDOC Week. The ceremony in Perth this weekend has helped kick off the 50th anniversary of NAIDOC Week, celebrations across the nation from the 6th to the 12th of July. West Australian general practitioner and dentist Daniel Hunt has been honoured as NAIDOC Person of the Year for his work in health sector, focusing on helping those facing disproportionately high rates of chronic disease and poor overall health.
These awards aren't or any individual awards. These are our awards because this is the work of everyone that has come before us. And that is the thing that we need to think about. It is the people that come before us that really pave the way. And so, you know, what my mum, Kerry, has set for us allows me to focus on what I can do for our community and for the people that come after us.
The 2024 Indigenous Doctor of the Year was also recognised for his work in managing Australia's syphilis epidemic. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has hailed the importance of personal relationships with Pacific nations at a time when powers like China are seeking to increase their influence. The Prime Minister, who will host Fijian counterpart Sitiveni Rabuka when the Wallabies take on Fiji in their one-off rugby union test in Newcastle, reiterated the importance of soft diplomacy in the region. Australia has provided $10 million over 7 years for the Fijian Drua women's and men's teams in the Super Rugby Pacific and Australia Super W competitions. Mr. Albanese says the approximately $600 million given over a decade to Papua New Guinea for the NRL team has also cemented the relationship between the two neighbouring nations. Warning, this story includes content that may distress some listeners. Victorian opposition leader Brad Batten says the state Labor government has ignored repeated calls to reform the state's working with children's laws. It comes after a 26-year-old man was charged with more than 70 sex offences after allegedly abusing 8 children aged under 2 at a Point Cook facility in Melbourne's West. The state Liberal Party points to a 2022 Victorian Ombudsman investigation into a former childcare worker who used data from their employer to find and sexually assault a child, finding several alarming flaws within Victoria's Working with Children's Check screening process. Mr. Batten says the state Labor government has done little to address these concerns.
When parents are sitting at home, they want to know they've got the confidence that the system is working. They want to know that when they drop their kids off in childcare or any place where they're not going to be with their children, that those who are working with them are respected people who should be able to have the safety to stay and work with those kids. But we've seen for too long too many people who continue to work in places where they shouldn't be. We are hearing of people who have had their working with children cards revoked and they still manage to work in areas with children.
Mortgage holders are hoping for a rate cut on Tuesday as the Reserve Bank's Mandatory Policy Board begins a two-day meeting this morning. It would be the first back-to-back rate cut in more than 5 years if the predictions being made by the majority of economists are right. The RBA decision is due within days of US President Donald Trump's self-imposed deadline to end a pause on so-called reciprocal tariffs. The Victorian government has announced a new anti-hate task force is being formed following a series of attacks in Melbourne targeting the Jewish community. Four incidences have been recorded since Friday night, 4th of July, including an arson attack on a Melbourne synagogue that has been condemned by politicians and community leaders. A man appeared in court in Melbourne on Sunday, charged with reckless conduct, endangering life, among other charges, after he allegedly set the front door of an East Melbourne synagogue alight while families shared Shabbat dinner inside. Premier Jacinta Allen says the new task force will include police and government representatives with the goal of looking at the bigger picture across the city and the state. The task force will meet this week for the first time, with invitations sent to members of Melbourne's Jewish community. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says the federal government is providing support in any way it can.
I've been constantly briefed by both ASIO and the Australian Federal Police, as well as talking with the Secretary of the Department of Home Affairs and talking each day with Anthony Carbines, the Police Minister here in Victoria. We are providing our full support because what matters here is not simply an arson attack. What matters here is there is an attack on Australia, an attack on Australian values.
Australia's special envoy to combat anti-Semitism has been criticised after she called for a ban on long-running protests in support of Palestinians in Australian cities. Gillian Siegel appeared before the New South Wales Parliamentary Inquiry examining anti-Semitism in the state and was pressed on comments she made to SBS last year, calling the weekly demonstrations intimidatory and sinister. Labor MP Stephen Lawrence says Ms. Siegel's comments on the protests are an uncivil way to describe them and the people participating, adding that her calls for a protest ban aren't grounded in law and reality. Ms. Siegel, who is the chair of the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce, acknowledged she had not attended the protests herself, but had heard accounts of others. She also brought up the now discredited Dural Caravan explosives plot, saying it had created fear and anxiety in the Jewish community. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's confident he'll get a meeting with United States President Donald Trump to talk about trade and tariffs before the end of the year. Speaking at a Sky News Australia's Economic Outlook Forum, Mr. Albanese says it was unlikely Australia would get an exemption from President Trump's across-the-board 10% tariffs on all imports into the United States. However, he insists he was not overly worried about Australian exports and that negotiations would continue.
We continue to be engaged with our American friends, but they have a different position on tariffs. I have said that's an act of economic self-harm. I stick to that. I have a different view about the economy and about trade.
President Trump's new tariff rates are set to come into effect on August 1st. In soccer, new Matildas coach Joe Montemurro faces his next challenge this afternoon, taking on Panama in a small coastal city of Bunbury in Western Australia. The newly formed squad will take on the Central American team in an international friendly at Hands Oval, Bunbury, south of Perth. It comes as the Matildas take their first steps towards the AFC Asian Cup 2026, which will be held in Australia. Last week, they took on Slovenia in a pair of matches in Perth, winning 3-0 in the first and drawing 1-1 in the second. Montemurro says it wasn't a perfect first outing, but he's confident the Matildas will perform better against Panama.
There's always going to be some teething problems, and we saw the change from game one to game two in terms of the timing and the understanding of when and where. A different team, Panama. They will not be pressing us all over the pitch like Slovenia. So I expect we'll probably have more opportunities to prepare situations. But there's going to be a lot of changes. So probably a little bit of a hiccup in continuity. But I hope to see the same sort of patterns and the same sort of, game approach.
Today in the weather for Monday, 7th of July, Thursday Island is mostly sunny at 29. Brisbane is mostly sunny at 23. Cairns is partly cloudy at 28. Newcastle is partly cloudy at 19. Sydney is the same at 19. Albury Wodonga is having morning fog at 13. Melbourne is sunny at 17. Hobart is sunny at 14. And Adelaide is cloudy at 16. Perth is seeing showers and is windy at 19. Broome is sunny at 30. Darwin is sunny at 32. Alice Springs is sunny at 24. That wraps up the weather, and also that's all for NITV Radio News. Tune in to listen to more after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. And while we're here, happy NAIDOC to you, Mob. Coming up today, we have, and over the coming week, is a bunch of deadly NAIDOC content and conversations. Today, we talk with Clotilde Bullen, a First Nations curator, with the exhibition The Neighbour at the Gate at the National Arts School, NAS. Kicking off the opening is this coming 11th of July. Clotilde yarns with us about various mediums and perspectives, legacies of exclusion and resilience, drawing vital parallels between the past and the present with Aboriginal mob and Asian communities. But first, we have a look at what's happening down in Victoria. A permanent Indigenous voice to Parliament is on its way, following after South Australia, to establish a state based democratically elected body to provide advice on laws and policies related to Aboriginal people. Have a listen. A permanent Indigenous voice to Parliament is on its way for Victoria. It makes Victoria the second state in Australia, after South Australia, to establish a state-based democratically elected body to provide advice on laws and policies related to Aboriginal people. The agreements comes at the same time as the handing down of the final report of the Yuruk Justice Commission after 4 years of hearings.
We stand here with our feet firmly on the lands of the Kaurna people. I pay my respect to their elders past, present and emerging, but the way we pay our respects first and foremost is not with our words but in our deeds. And there are no more powerful deeds than South Australia becoming the first place in our nation to pass a law enshrining an Indigenous voice to our Parliament.
That was Peter Malianakis, the Premier of South Australia, when the state passed groundbreaking legislation for the state-based voice to Parliament. Now, Victoria is set to follow South Australia's example. Jacinta Allen is Victoria's Premier.
As a state, we are up for this. We're up for this very simple, common sense change of involving and listening First People in the decisions that affect them.
First Peoples Assembly of Victoria co-chair Ruben Berg says the creation of the body has been on the table since January, part of its treaty talks between the group and the state government.
To be able to build on the work of so many of our people across countless generations, to be able to say that we actually start the negotiations of treaty.
How will the voice to Parliament work? The first assembly, made up of 33 elected members, will provide advice on laws and policies that affect Indigenous communities in Victoria, from health and education to crime and development. The Premier says their voice to Parliament will aim to enable First Nations people to have a better say.
The treaty process and outcome is grounded in that pretty simple common sense approach that when you listen to people who are affected by policies and programs, when you involve them in the processes, you get better outcomes.
The Premier says the state's voice to Parliament won't be written into its constitution because it does not require constitutional change, unlike the failed federal proposal. Ruben Berg says negotiations will continue on the treaty because of the importance of truth-telling and keeping government accountable.
Those conversations in a respectful way, and we'll be able to deliver a treaty which will deliver powerful outcomes for our communities, powerful outcomes for all Victoria, making sure that we get better outcomes for our communities so that our future generations can thrive.
The confirmation of Victorian Voice comes as the Parliament has tabled its final two reports from the state's Yuruk Commission, bringing an end to the work of the Justice Commission after 4 years of hearings and evidence from more than 200 witnesses. The reports made 100 recommendations across 5 volumes and provided an official public record of Victoria's history since colonisation. But the official record features a disclaimer that 3 of the 5 commissioners, Adjunct Professor Sue-Ann Hunter, Distinguished Professor Maggie Walter, and former Federal Court Judge Anthony North, did not approve of the inclusion of the key findings in the final report. Still, Commissioner Chair Eleanor Burke said she had lived through many of the policies described in the pages and hopes for real and lasting change for Victoria's First Nations communities. The highly respected Wagaya Wamba Wamba elder told the National Press Club in May she had been humbled by the Indigenous people who gave evidence and encouraged by the decision to implement the commission 4 years ago.
I knew it would be the hardest and most important work of my professional life, and so it has proved to be. In 2021, Victoria made history by establishing the Yuruk Justice Commission, the first formal truth-telling process in this country. Not a gesture, not a box tick, but a bold commitment to listen to the voices of the oldest living cultures on earth.
That story brought to you by Helena Krishnamoorthy and Deborah Gork, produced by NITV Radio. Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Today, I'm joined by Clotilde Bullen, the lead curator of major exhibition The Neighbour at the Gate, set to open at the National Art School this July. It features new commissions exploring the connections between First Nations peoples and Asian Australian communities. Thanks for having a yarn with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Chloe, can you tell us a little bit about who you are? Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a Wurundjeri and Budimaya woman from the southwest of Western Australia, and I have been working in the visual arts field for the last probably 3 decades, I guess, so quite a long time. I came through actually as a very young person working in a commercial Aboriginal art gallery, and went on to work at state institutions and at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney. So I've done a lot of work in the area, and I was most recently the chair of the National Association for the Visual Art. I was the chair of that board, so I've been around a long time. I love what I do. I'm really passionate about the way that art can heal, can educate, can challenge, and the way in which First Nations mob can actually sort of represent themselves through their art and culture. So it's a really important space to be in.
This exhibition, The Neighbour at the Gate, it's got First Nations and Asian Australian artists involved. Can you tell us, what is this exhibition? Who's in it? What are audiences going to see?
There are 6 artists that the curatorium has selected to be part of the exhibition. Initially, I was approached to do the exhibition and really wanted to work alongside a curatorium who reflected the ideas of the exhibition. So we have Zali Morgan, who's a Wolman and Balladong Noongar curator from over this way as well. And we have Michael Doe, who is a senior curator at the Sydney Opera House. And we as a curatorium have worked together to bring these artist commissions to life, I suppose. 6 incredible artists. Dennis Golding, who people might know, who's actually from Redfern in Sydney. Jackie Cheng, James Tyler, Jenna Lee, James Nguyen, and Elam Ishragian Hakanson. So 3 First Nations artists in conversation, sort of collaborating with 3 Asian Australian artists from Asian diaspora. And what's really exciting about that, I think, is just this the way that we've curated the show to really ensure that these ideas around coming together, around what sort of unites us rather than divides us, is really shown any collaborations and kind of conversations between artists and their output in the show, their commissions, which, you know, are the first time they've been done. It's the first time anyone will see them. It's really special. It's been sort of an idea of mine to do this show because I grew up in the Bronx of Perth in a place called the KGB, which a lot of black fellas from over here will know. It's Kandula Balgagirwin state housing, you know, and I grew up in that place, and it was a place of such strong community, I suppose. And within those suburbs, there are a lot of delis run by Asian mob, and so I grow up sort of normalising that sense of community, and also seeing in our families that many black fellas would marry into Asian mob and vice versa. So it was really normalised, but I really felt that people outside of those communities had no idea that's what we do, and that's what had happened in our histories and is still happening. My kids are Blackanese, as we call them, so married into Burmese Aboriginal mob. I really wanted to talk about this idea sort of on a much bigger scale, so we could sort of let people know this is a history and a type of community that exists in Australia that not many people know about.
So when it comes to these artists that are involved, we can't get into every single one, but can you share a little bit about what some of these works are doing and exploring?
Yeah, absolutely. With all of the works, they're brand new commissions, or they're building on sort of previous ideas from the artists. So we wanted to have, I guess, some spectacle, but also some moments of intimacy and some moments of a real sense of community and bringing people in. We have tried to be really inclusive. The works themselves feel really inclusive. They feel like they're asking you to be part of a conversation and asking you if you can see yourselves in them. So we have all kinds of sort of thematics that we're dealing with. Some of it's sort of about ritual and ceremony. Some of it is about family ties and the way we interact with our families and other and our broader extended families. Some of it's about that sense of community. How do we create a sense of community when we're often, you know, kept from each other very deliberately? You know, a lot of these, particularly these Asian Australian artists, their mothers or fathers or grandparents or, you know, people in their extended families, when they came to Australia, they weren't told anything about Aboriginal people. And effectively, and this is where the name sort of comes from, they were quarantined at the gate. So they were deliberately not told anything about Aboriginal people and the history of this country when they came here. And so it's been a bit of a journey for many Asian Australian people to actually find out and understand the history of this place that they've come to. And so a lot of the work sort of address that and talk about that experience, I suppose, and also the experience of kind of then coming together with Aboriginal people in the community and kind of, you know, creating relationships. So the show is really a call in. It's not I'm not sort of a big fan of cancel culture, and I prefer to be able to, in the way that is more traditional in our way, to call people in, to kind of sit down with people and educate them about our culture and what happen and who we are, and that's really what this show and what the artist's work embodies.
So as lead curator, you've been very hands-on in who comes in and what stories are being told here, but you also have two other curators helping with this collaboration. What's it like to be able to collaborate with a team of people on your side and the artists?
I mean, I've loved it, actually. I've been doing this for a really long time, as I said, and my role now really is to support more early career or mid-career or people who are younger than me, to support them coming through and to actually support their careers. It's really critical that we do this. It's proper in our way to actually, as older people in communities, I'm not an elder, but as an older person in community, as an auntie, I guess, to really support people coming through and to ensure that continuity of teaching and learning in that space continues. So that was really what I wanted and what the intent was behind having a curatorium. And it's really, really worked. And I absolutely love these two that I'm working with. They are spectacular human beings, and it's been a really thoughtful and considered and very lovely process to be in with them, but equally so with all of the artists. I cannot speak highly enough of these artists. They have embraced this process, which has been a bit of a different curatorial process, have embraced it wholeheartedly, and they you know, friendships have been formed out of this, and people have really loved being a part of the process, I think. And part of that has been about building into the budget a way for all of us to continuously sort of come together and keep discussing these ideas. It makes the work much more impactful, I think.
I have here that one of the quotes from Katrina and John, I'm not sure who said it, but that this curation is kind of like a cultural conversation in truth-telling between our Aboriginal and Asian history.
Yeah, definitely. I think John Waite is one of the key sort of people that we've been liaising with at NAS, and Katrina Cashman, who's, and the NAS team, the National Art School team, have been absolutely wonderful to work with, I must say. Shout out to Lucy Lutella, who I used to work with at the MCA. She's working with us as well. And they've been fantastic. And I think they've really understood that this premise and the nature of this show, which really, it's sort of, I guess, deceptive in a way, because the work is so beautiful that you forget that you're actually seeing something laid bare, which is this history, a very different history and experience of Australia that's been had by Asian Australian and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this country. So the truth-telling is an interesting word, because I think everyone's truths are different, but I do think that what this show has allowed is the autonomy by the artist to tell their narratives and their stories in the way that they wish to, and that's absolutely critical.
So when it comes to audiences coming and seeing this, what do you hope that they take when they leave this exhibition?
I actually hope they leave with a really warm feeling. I hope that they can see themselves reflected in the work in some way. We really doing a lot around the public program to invite people from Western Sydney, particularly where a lot of these communities are from. We're doing a lot in the public program to make sure we have translators for Vietnamese and, you know, Cantonese and Mandarin, and a whole range of different language points and access points for people, because we want to support sort of non-typical arts communities, I suppose, to come in and see the show and to see themselves reflected in it and go, hey, this, I know this story. This story is my story as well. And that's really, really important, because art's supposed to be accessible to everyone. And when we don't do that, when we don't invite communities and the public in, and different groups from different language communities and things like that, if we don't do that, I think we're failing in our duty to make art for everyone, you know. So I want people to leave feeling like they've seen something of themselves in it, that yes, they have been challenged, but also that they've been comforted at the same time.
So for audiences who want to come and see this exhibition, where should they go? When is it happening?
It's happening at the National Art School, which is in Darlinghurst in New South Wales. And it's opening on Thursday, the 10th of July. And the opening to the public is on the 11th. We're going to be having a whole series of artist talks and artists in conversation with their family members and with us as the curatorium on the Friday. And then on the Friday night, we've got bingo and karaoke, because Bustle love bingo and karaoke. And then on Saturday, we've got a whole host of printmaking workshops and ceramic making workshops and DJs and singers and a really huge sort of public program, almost like a festival. So we'd love to see everyone come on down and share with us in that.
Hey, in time for NAIDOC.
Absolutely in time for NAIDOC. Yes, very specifically, yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and having a yarn and telling us all about this exhibition.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Clotilde, lead curator of the Neighbour at the Gate exhibition. The Neighbour at the Gate exhibition will start from the 11th of July to the 18th of October 2025 at the National Art School Gallery. If you'd like to search for more information, you can find it at the website at nas.edu.au. You're listening to NITV Radio.